Great. Good evening, everybody. Shmuel Klotzer coming at you live from Gulf Menor Synagogue and our School of Jewish Studies here in Cincinnati, Ohio. Sorry we're a little bit late, but not too bad. Here we go. We are continuing our Tanakh Tuesday series. We study 1 Kings. Today is June something or other. June 18, Mrs. Burlap? June 18? Yeah, I think so too. June 18. Yes, it is. 2019. We ended off last week on Tuesday, June 11th, and here it is a week later. So we are on the cusp of finishing chapter 10, and there's plenty to talk about here. And also, I also prepared a few psukim into chapter 11, and there's a lot to talk about over there. So we are going to be busy the entire hour, and let's get started. If you've got 1 Kings chapter 10, great. Turn then to chapter 10 and verse. A lot of footnotes over here. Chapter 10, verse 23. Here we go in the Hebrew. Let's get started. And we'll do everything we need to do. Chaf Gimel, 23. Vayigdal HaMelech Shlomo Mikol Malchei Haaretz. Now, Shlomo HaMelech was greater. And they translate over here, he transcended. And that's, I think, a perfectly good translation, because it's exactly what the pasuk is trying to get at. He was Godel. I mean, he was Vayigdal HaMelech. He like goes bigger and bigger. He was above and beyond. He transcended Mikol Malchei Haaretz, all the kings of the world. I mean, look at that word. Mikol Malchei Haaretz, all the kings of the earth. La'osher, regarding osher, wealth, money, affluence, ulachokhma, and wisdom. Quite a thing to say. All the kings of the earth. And we're going to see in a moment, in a pasuk or two, we'll be getting word from all the people of the earth. Are these just kind of, terms that we just kind of flippantly throw out? All the kings of the earth? All the people of the earth? I mean, that's a lot of people. I don't know how many people were living 3,000 years ago or whatever it was, but it must have been a lot of people. I want to say it was 7 billion like we have today, but it was something. At all events, doesn't matter. Well, this is what we're confronted with. Now, please take a look at your footnote on verse 23, and you're going to find that on page 118. Got to skip over a couple of pages. Page or two, or whatever it is. Yeah, I've got two, three pages. And you go from 117 over to 118, and here's the footnote. And you're skipping over pages B, C, D, and E, and F. And that's how they did it. I'm not sure why, but that's what they did. So verse 23, our footnote, and they're going to be quoting down Rav Yosef Kara, not Rashi, but Rav Yosef Kara. He was a great medieval commentary as well. And here's the pasuk that they're playing on. Now, King Shlomo was greater than all the kings of the earth. Here's the footnote. Therefore, Hashem's promise to Shlomo, quote, I have also given you that which you haven't asked for, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be any among the kings like you all the days. So that was fulfilled, according to Rabbi Yosef Kara. That promise from the Almighty was fulfilled, and you see it fulfilled right here in this verse explicitly. God says he's going to give you great riches, great honor, and we've already seen the honor, we've seen the wisdom. Pasuk says, Chochma, we've seen Shlomo in action, solving riddles, figuring out how to deal with the baby between the two women, and so much else. He was judging the people on a consistent basis. And riches, we've already seen almost indescribable riches, unfathomable, buildings going up, everything's gilded with gold. Everything is made out of gold. Thousands of animals are being sacrificed every single day, feeding thousands of people every single day. Everything takes money, and he had it. So much so that silver was either worthless or close to it. And there we're going to see, hopefully tonight, we'll see two pshetlach as to how to understand the value of silver in Solomon's land of Israel. But if we, God willing, we're going to get there tonight. So that's that pasuk, that Shlomo transcended everybody, all the kings of the earth, in affluence and money and in wisdom. Pasuk Chaf Dalet, 24. So we're skipping, I'm going back and forth a little bit between the Hebrew and the English. Back onto page 117 for the Hebrew. Verse 24, V'chol ha'aretz mevakshim es p'nei Shlomo. All, V'chol ha'aretz, all the land, meaning they translate it, doesn't mean all the land of Israel. Now, often in Scripture, the word aretz will mean Israel, and it often does. But over here, we're talking about a global presence. Here's the king who's like a global phenomenon. He is greater than Mikol Malchei Haaretz, from all the kings of the world. So that word, Kol Haaretz, is coming up again. The Kol Haaretz, it doesn't mean the whole Israel, all the people in Israel, it doesn't mean that, people in Israel. It means the whole world. The Kol Haaretz Mevakshim Es Pnei Shlomo. All the inhabitants of earth sought out Shlomo, as Pnei Shlomo. They went to see his presence. They wanted to meet with him. Why? Pasuk says, it continues, Lishmoa es chokhmaso, to listen, to hear his wisdom, Asher nasan elokim belibo. Here we go over to page 118. Asher nasan elokim belibo, which the Almighty God placed in his heart, which God endowed him with. Really an amazing pasuk. To be taken literally, I wonder sometimes, is it an exaggeration to say that everybody on earth wanted to hear his wisdom? But you know what? That's what I'm being told. And it's written Baruch HaKodesh. So here we go. So all the inhabitants of the earth, says the Kli Yakar in a footnote to 24, and all the inhabitants of the earth, not only did the kings seek his audience and bring him gifts, but all the inhabitants of the earth, the general populace, sought audience with him and brought him gifts and tribute, says the Kli Yakar. So you see right over here that this is not what's the term I'm looking for? Exaggerated talk. It must be a fancier English term. But okay, we'll go with this for now. It's not the case that this is just an exaggeration. This is to be taken literally. All the kings sought him out. All the inhabitants of the earth sought him out. And when you seek out the king, you got to bring something with you. And we're going to see that in a moment. Let's continue on.
Because he needed more.
Mrs. Miller says because he was lacking something. Because we all know this was a king. And in Yiddish, the term was, you would say, bring him some pomegranates. Thus felt him. That's what's failing him. He doesn't have any Chinese apples. He doesn't have any peaches. You got to bring him a big, big box of peaches. No, this is a king on everything. I don't know what you're going to bring him, but out of respect, you bring him something, probably from your own country, something unique from your own nation. And who knows? I mean, obviously, he's got all the wealthy needs, all the animals he needs, but if you get a little something from Japan, you get a little something from Egypt, it means something, and it's a sweet thought. And maybe it doesn't grow locally in Israel, so maybe he does not going to eat it. I don't know. Could be. If it's not grown locally, and you grow something in your country, that's a nice thing. It's a nice gesture. So there's that idea that possibly that's what's going on. People bringing him gifts and tribute. They're seeking his presence. Mevakshim es pnei Shlomo, says the Pasuk. They're seeking his presence. Literally, that means the literal understanding is exactly what we just said, seeking out his face. That is, they sought to see his face. So they wanted, the Targum Yonis and the Mitzuda wants you to go literal over here. Obviously, we understand you can have an audience with the king, but the author of the Pasuk is picking this phrase, Pnei Shlomo. It doesn't just mean to be in his presence and to be close to him and hang. Of course we understand that. But people wanted to see his face. They wanted to see the holy face of this wisest of men. They wanted to see, I want to see what he looks like. I want to gaze upon that righteous face. I want to see his face. What does he look like? So that's the pasuk. Mevachim is Pnei Shlomo. Want to see his face. Here's the brother.
Like the freak show at the circus, right. Something that's different, out of the ordinary. I want to see, what does this look like?
Right. I want to see what this holy man of the Jews, who's been endowed by God, if they have an idea about God, I mean, if they're pagans, it's probably a problem, but his God has given him extraordinary wealth and extraordinary wisdom. There's something going on over here, and I want to meet this man, because he must be onto something good. If he's been so rewarded with so much money and so much wisdom, and it's like a divine wisdom, I got to meet the man who's got that. And I would even hazard a guess that some of these people were willing to come on over to our side once they met Solomon, because how do you argue with the God of Israel, who endows a man with such beauty and such wealth and such wisdom and everything? How do you fight that? Clearly, there's a God in heaven, and he's giving this guy everything. Imagine that. The city was gilded with gold. These buildings had to be just overlaid with gold. The Mizbeah, the stuff was made out of pure gold. And then you've got the wisest man on the earth sitting on this throne, a throne that's difficult to even imagine, with animals and levers, and I don't know what's going on over there. Unbelievable. I can't even begin to understand it and describe it. And people walking in going, I'm joining this team. This is a team I can join. This is a team that's in first place in the division. Really. Back then, the Jews were in first place in the division. And they held on to first place year in and year out for quite a while. They sought, Kleyuka says, they sought to gaze on his countenance, which shone from his divinely endowed wisdom. Truly, the people over there wanted to see this face. Next pasuk. Chaf Hey. Now we're back over to our page 118. Chaf Hey, 25? 21st, 25 at the top?
Yeah, okay, the next part of it, I think that's not where.
That's correct. The next one is, and weapons. And I noticed that, and I made a little correction of my own. That's going to come up in verse 25. So I would respectfully ask you to also write in the number 25 over there where it says, and weapons, because it just does not find its way into verse 24. So we continue. 25, Chafei, here we go. We're coming close to finishing this chapter. Very exciting. Behema mevim ish min chaso. Each one would bring his gift, would bring his mincha. Klei kesef, and that meant vessels of silver, uchle zahav, vessels of gold. Uslamos, I would think, but I see it spelled uslamos. I got a sin over there. That's a weird spelling. I think it should be shlamos. I would have thought, but it says garments. Oh, simlaos, usalamos. I'm so sorry. The word is simla. But look, it's spelled silma. Am I going crazy? What's going on? Is there a typo? Is there a typo in this book? Mrs. Burloff, can you? Mrs. Burloff is going to check a different biblical text for us. Because, simply put, I think that if the word is going to be garments, that's how they translate it, then maybe the word ought to be spelled usimalos.
I think it's one of those things where they...
It means the same thing. Okay, Mrs. Brolet is finding the same exact spelling on the Makros Gedolos biblical production. So she's making a good point. Sometimes in Hebrew, you see it often, just don't ask me right now, how you find letters sometimes interchanged.
Keves and Kesev.
Okay, Keves and Kesev. And you'll find that even though the letters interchange, the definition will very often be the exact same. So over here, I'm looking at, uslamos. I'm going, uslamos. If they're bringing up, let's say, carbonos, sacrifices, then it should be uslamos. You know, carbonos shlamim, let's say. But no, the word is uslamos, and they're translating it as garments. I would have thought it should be spelled usmalos, but I've already been through this. So we continue, uslamos and garments. Thank you, Mrs. Miller, for looking it up. Veneshek, in Israel they would pronounce it Neshek. And that means, of course, Neshek in modern Israeli Hebrew. Rabbi joining us soon, he could weigh in. Neshek in modern Israeli Hebrew means weapons. And presumably it's exactly what it meant even in ancient Hebrew, in biblical Hebrew. Neshek, they were bringing weapons. We're going to see that footnote. Now we can see the footnote in a second. We'll be able to see it then. Uvesamim and spices, susim, horses, ufragim, mules, divar shana b'shana. This matter, this item, and they translate this tribute, it's a good word, due each year, year in and year out. That's what's going on over here. You come to the king, you bring him goodies. You bring him respect. You bring him the goods. All these wonderful things. Silver, gold, clothing, weapons, spices, horses. He didn't really need more horses. Horses and mules. That was the tribute. Amazing. You get a chance to meet the king, you give a gift. Now we can see a footnote or two and see how that's treated. Weapons, okay? There's not much on that. Rashi and the Mitzuta, Klei Zayin, okay, they're translating. It means warfare-related material. Klei Zayin, these are weapons, that's what Neshek means. And it continues, the tribute due each year, Dvar Shana B'Shana, they would bring him these gifts year in and year out. And this follows Targum Yonasim. The tribute due each year in its year. Others render this as, quote, the custom of each year in its year. What does that mean? It means what you bring as a customary gift, what's expected. This was the customary gift presented to a monarch by each one who gained his audience. You come in front of the king, you better be bearing gifts. If you don't, you are in the wrong. You cannot approach a king in ancient times without carrying something that's of value, and it better be of good value. Can you imagine that? Imagine coming to the wealthiest man in the world and the smartest man, and you're saying to yourself, well, he doesn't really need anything from me. He's the smartest man. I can't say anything he doesn't know. And he's got a lot of food. I'm getting reports. He's feeding thousands. He's got gold. He's got everything he needs. I'm not going to bring him anything. Are you kidding me? You don't do that. So you bring him from your country a gift because you're gaining an audience with the king. Since it was customary to see the king once a year, it was customary to present him with a gift once a year. That's what you do. And that's quoting the Mitzuta and the Malbim. And Mr. Brov, please weigh in.
Okay. When this was the customary gift presented to a monarch, presumably it doesn't mean everybody's giving the same thing. That would really be bad.
Right. It's everybody's giving a unique gift, I would think. Am I right? A unique gift per person.
Seems to be a better plan.
Right. Exactly. And that is verse 25. And we don't have, even though there's a star over there sending me back, funny that we don't see anything on verse 25, even though I'm told to go into the back. We do have on 24.
Yeah, that's right. They got those two things.
Maybe they got that confused a little bit. This, we'll just read that footnote as long as we're there. Verse 24 has a further footnote. This verse 24, which talks about, all the inhabitants of the earth seeking his presence there, the wisdom which God endowed him. This verse illustrates that in addition to the intrinsic value of his wisdom, it was a vehicle also to bring him honor and wealth. So says the Abarbanel. So you see from over here that the Eibishter gave him a bracha of honor and it gave him wisdom. He had asked for wisdom and God thereby... By loving the request that Shlomo asked for, wisdom, God then blessed him with honor and wealth. And says the Abarbanel, that was the vehicle that gained him the honor and the wealth. It was his phenomenal divine wisdom. Okay, so we've already seen several psukim over here. I'll read them through for Rabbi Berlov in the English. 23, 24, and 25. Now King Solomon transcended all the kings of the earth in affluence and wisdom. 24. And all the inhabitants of the earth sought his presence to hear the wisdom with which God had endowed him. 25, and each, Hail Mary also, and each one, each person in the earth. And this is an amazing thing. Kol Haaretz, Kol Haaretz, Kol Malchei Haaretz, all the kings of the earth, all the people of the earth. Let's face it. Mrs. Brillo and I were just amazed at the idea that all the people of the earth wanted to meet him, that all the kings, you know, were subservient to him, and they wanted to meet him and give him tribute, and wanted to make his acquaintance and learn his wisdom and be in his presence and see his face, and literally see his face. And verse 25 will translate that, and each one, each human being who wanted to have an audience with the king, and we're told everybody did, an amazing thing. I mean, how many people were alive back then? And each one would bring his gift. What were those gifts? Vessels of silver and gold, garments, weapons, spices, horses, mules, the tribute due each year in its year. And so we were discussing that it's a customary thing in ancient times. If you're going to see the king once a year, then you, the minhag was, you bring him a gift that once a year. So there you have that. If anybody wants to weigh in among the newly arrived, you know, chaverim, please, by all means, do weigh in. Otherwise, we're going to continue on to verse 26. Considering that we only have 29 verses in the parak, we are very close to finishing the parak. And then we'll move on to chapter 11. Verse 26. Vayesov Shlomo Rechev Ufarashim. Shlomo assembled chariots and horsemen. Vayhilo Elef V'arba Meos Rechev. He had 1,400 chariots. 1,400 chariots. Ushneim Asar Elef Parashim. And he had 12,000 horsemen. So you got 12,000 guys riding these 1,400 chariots. Vayanchem Be'orei HaRechev. We translate here in the Judaica. He led them in the chariot cities, Be'orei HaRechev, V'im HaMelech, and with the king, Birushalayim, in Jerusalem. Now, strap on your thinking caps, because what happens now is a little bit strange, because we're going to be confronted by the reality that Rashi had a slightly different girsa in front of him. And maybe that's not all that terribly unusual, but when it jumps out, it jumps out. And I am right now researching for next Shavuos. I know that sounds completely crazy. All right, call me nutty, but this is what I do. I'm looking into the Gemara and Shabbos, Nun Hei, Amud Beis, where it starts off with Ma'avirim, and Tysus over there says that the Shas that we have is Cholek Alasfarim Shalanu. It sometimes does not agree with the biblical books that we have regarding spelling. It's mostly a spelling thing. Not always, because sometimes it's not just spelling, but often it is. A Yud is missing, a Vav is there, a Vav is missing, a Yud is there. So we're going to lay this all out. And the Bechiva Eger, Gilead Ashas, he lays out many, many, many examples in his notation over there on the Gemara right off the north. So if you want to see it, from the very famous Rosh Ruvan Achmeni talk, you know, his discussions about if you think that David sinned, that's not true. If you think Reuben sinned, it's not true. A whole long Torah over there about reimagining and revisiting biblical stories. And over there, Tosfos makes this comment, and it's not the only place Tosfos makes the comment, that Shas has slightly different spellings than the biblical books that have been brought down to us and the spellings that we see there. So we'll try to flesh all that out at 4 o'clock in the morning. Well, good luck to us. Maybe we'll do a little bit earlier, but it requires a little bit of thought. I got to learn it up with people so I know what I'm talking about. I want to actually also got to look these things up. You have to actually see them written down so you can compare. It takes a little bit of time. And so I want to give it its time. At all events, let's go ahead and, again, we are confronted in our Book of Kings with the idea that there are Bameos Rechev, 1,400 chariots. That's what the biblical Book of Kings says to us here. And guess what? In 2 Chronicles chapter 1, we're told, we got to go into Divrei Yamim Beis, and Baruch Hashem, I brought it along with me. Glad I did that. Beis, and this is chapter 1, verse 14. So stay with me. Stay with me. We have the exact same verse and the exact same number. Okay, I'll read it in the Hebrew. I was looking for an English, doesn't matter. It's all the same wordage. But yes, of Shlomo Rechav of Farshim, Shlomo gathered in all these chariots and horsemen. Vahilo Elef, the Arba Meos Rechav. He had 1,400 Rechav. Chariots. Same exact number as we see in the biblical book of 1 Kings. So there's 2 Chronicles, chapter 1, verse 14. I'm proving it to you. And you see now in front of you in 1 Kings, same number. So you're saying, so Shmuel, loves me for Lord, leave me alone. I mean, what do I still need to know? The answer is Rashi is going to be troublesome, a shtickle problematic for us, because Rashi has a slightly different girsa entirely, apparently. Let's go take a look and see what there is to see over here. So again, word for word, Vayez of Shlomo, we'll take it a chunk at a time. Shlomo assembled, I'll read the footnote. Shlomo assembled was the means, the Mitzvah says that Shlomo assembled from the tribute that was brought to him from all the kesef and all the horses and all the mules that we just heard about in the previous pasuk. He starts gathering all these gifts. They add up to a lot. So what does he have? He has rechev and poroshim, chariots and horsemen. So this can be rendered alternatively as chariots and horses. See Sefer HaShorashim, Sira Bayona Ibn Ginach. Now, here's where it gets a little bit sketchy. Take a look. Well, you know, take a look at the Rashi in the Hebrew, if you have it. If you don't worry about it. I'll do a bit of right reading over here. Elef Arba Meos Rechev. That's the number that we have in front of us here in Kings. 1,400. Uve Divrei Hayamim. And in Chronicles, Rashi says, you know what state Dorton over there? In 2 Chronicles chapter 1, verse 14, Kasuv, it's written, Elef Ushvameos. It's written over there, 1,700. Ding, ding, ding. Wait a second. I just read to you what we have in front of us here. This is authentic stuff. 1,400, that's the Bible. So what is Rashi talking about? Rashi's got a whole different text in front of him. Rashi's text, 1,000 years ago, set in the Second Chronicle, if you looked it up, he wanted to see, you know, if everything is shaking out correctly, the same one. No. Rashi says, oh, you give up. I got a different number in Second Chronicles in front of me. Wow. That's really something. But you've got a different text in front of you, Rashi. Says the footnote, this was obviously Rashi's version of this verse. According to our version, there isn't any discrepancy between the wording in 1 Kings and the wording in 2 Chronicles. Same exact number, 1,400. So again, Rashi, in 2 Chronicles, Kosov, it stated that Shlomo had 1,000, they said they had 1,400. What are they gaining by writing that? That is a typo. What is that? If you're going to give me Rashi, give it to me. Elef Ushvameos, 1,700. That's what Rashi's writing in the Hebrew. So why is my guy over here giving me, it is stated that Solomon had 1,400. Not according to Rashi's girsa.
How does it continue in English?
Last time we looked at that, that was because something, was these the slaves that he gave him? Or something like that. He didn't, not slaves to live, and so he didn't count those ones.
Right, you're correct. Good memory on that. But I don't remember there being a clashing between biblical verses. Am I wrong? If you can jog your memories a little bit, that whole there was a whole discussion about the number. It wasn't the same number, but he was like dividing. Maybe you're right. Maybe there were different numbers. There were different numbers in Chronicles, a different number in Kings. That's what it was. There was a different number in Kings and different number in Chronicles, and Rosh is going, oh, I've got to make some sense out of the math. So Rosh says, okay, how about this? Okay, 30 over here, 300 over there. So he starts making a chesed. Okay, good. But over here, I'm confronted by Rashi saying, whoa, I got a different number in front of me in my Bible. And I'm going, you got a different number in your Bible? I don't have a different number in my Bible. My Bible says 1400. Hey, Rashi, hey, buddy, how come your Bible is disagreeing with my Bible? It was only 1,000 years ago. Am I crazy? What was going on over here? That was only 1,000 years ago, and Rashi had a different girsa than I have over here. His was 300 different. Oh, I'm going, should I make such a big deal out of it? I don't know, but it's a whole different number. He's got a different girsa on the number. And I'm just curious how that goes down. I'm just going to throw it out for your consideration. I'll keep moving through, and we'll cut through material, and we'll do what we got to do tonight. But you just give this some thought. Let it marinate in your brain, because I've got zero insight into this. I just have no idea how to explain it, and that's the reality. So if you have a shot, by all means, share it with the Olam, and we'll all be uplifted. All eyes on you, Rabbi Brola. Ah, Baruch Hashem, I looked up. You've got your hand up. Please share what you've got.
Right. I cannot list what I have on the spirit of all with the other glaring discrepancies, but I will quote something which is in print from a very kosher figure, Rabbi Yaakov Feinberg, Rav Shalom, Rosh Yeshiva of Neri Yisrael. I believe I read it to privately once. He has a book in English about the fundamental beliefs that you have to have, based on the Rambam 13, explaining them. When it comes to the Rambam statement that one of the principles you must believe in is that we're talking about the Torah itself, the five books of Moses, that the Torah that we have today is exactly the same Torah that was given to Moshe. Rabbi Weiner says on that, this is true, but it's been taken to be true, and basically true, roughly speaking true, and not 100% true to the nth degree. And the reason is, he gives certain examples that there are discrepancies, there are controversies about, you know, minor points, usually it is the yud, the vav, whatever. So if that is true, and stated as such by the most blood kosher authority, what I find interesting is that some things which maybe we know are true and kosher to believe in are sometimes smoothed over by those who write for the masses in order that it should not become, you know, an obstacle or something to hinge unacceptable beliefs on. But here he said it occurs to say it no other way. Because how can every single set of variations in Sefer Torah be the one? But if I'm saying now, if it's true on the level of the five books of Moses, in Kal Vachomer, it's going to be true in the rest of the Tanakh.
Thank you very much. That was good. Thank you. Mr. Bell, what do you got?
We certainly have examples in Chumash where Rashi has a different gifts than we have. You know, he'll comment on a spelling or something and it doesn't match what we have.
But a whole different number strikes me as odd. A yud here, a vav here.
Yeah.
A yud and a vav, I more than understand, and I don't even get flustered by it. Oh, there's a vav, it should be a yud, the Tamanim say it's a yud, the Tamanim say it's a vav. You think I'm bothered by that? It's human beings. With I mean, I, it's understandable. Over the course of 3,000 years, a yud's going to be elongated to look like a vav. What do I know? Happens like that. It does change the translation big time, but I'm not surprised by a yud and a vav thing going on. But a whole different a letter, a vav versus an ayin instead of an a, that's a little bit strange. And how do you spell Bilam? Well, it depends who you ask. I mean, it's a very strange kind of a thing going on. Or Bilam's father. And it's a whole, it's like Bilam's father thing. There's a different spelling from the St. Petersburg and the Ketram Sova. It's a whole thing. And I think we once dealt with it a few years back, pre-Mincha Shir. And I have it somewhere. I got to find it. But over here, a different number is a little bit striking because it's not a yud, it's not a vav, it's not an ayin, it's not a hey, I don't care. But it's a whole different number. And even there, an ayin and a hey I should care about. But but a different number is a little, what's up with that? Do you agree with me? I mean, a whole different number. But again, it's right here, it's in the Tanakh. And Rabbi Rosh is saying, listen, these things are not that... We should understand that not that it can happen. It's not that unusual. It's 99.9% of the time in the Chamisha Chumshi Torah that there is uniformity. You got the 0.1% jumping around out there. That's understandable. And if it's understandable for the Chamisha Chumshi Torah, then it's going to have to be even more understandable for the Sifrei HaTanakh. We have to live with this reality and not get so bent out of shape, and we'll try to figure things out as we go. So this is what's going on. So Rashi's text had a different, altogether different number. That was his text. So he had 1,700 in front of him. Okay. And finally, again, let me just reread this. And it stated that Shlomo had 1,400 chariots. This is the correct, they write over here, this is the correct version of Rashi in view of his explanation of the two verses. See below. Okay. But Rashi writes what he writes. In front of me, I got 1,700. Okay? So he's going to continue now and explain it. Says Rashi in English, for time's sake, I say that 1,400 were in the chariot cities. Pasuk just said that it's that you've got these chariots in the Orei HaRechav, in the chariot cities. So Rashi says, okay, so you got 1,400 in the chariot cities, and Rashi's confronted by the 1,700 numbers. He's got to make sense out of that. What do you do with the other 300? Rashi continues, and the other 300, and the remaining 300 were, see the pasuk, the Im HaMelech, Yerushalayim. That's how he's parsing it out. 1,400 in the chariot cities, 300 with the king in Jerusalem. Now, the Rabbi Rosenberg writes in, hence, although the wording in Chronicles is essentially the same as in Kings.
Either it is or isn't.
Well, I'm reading what I'm reading. Don't kill me, man. But, okay, hence, although the wording in Chronicles is essentially the same as in Kings, it nevertheless must be interpreted differently, since the number of chariots does not coincide. Now we go back to Rashi, translation of Rashi, quote, and this is the explanation of the pasuk in Chronicles. He stationed them, that is, because Rashi is confronted by 1,700 in Chronicles. He stationed them, meaning 1,400, in the chariot cities and with the king. That is, with the king, there were other chariots in Jerusalem. And here the editor writes, thus the phrases, quote, Im HaMelech, with the king, Yerushalayim, in Yerushalayim, that refers to the other 300 not mentioned in the verse. Over there in Chronicles for Rashi's text, Rashi's trying to make sense out of this. 1,400 here, 1,700 there. How? Says Rashi, oh, okay, 1,400 go into the chariot cities, and with the king, there are 300 with the king in Yerushalayim, even though it's not mentioned explicitly in Chronicles. It's how to be understood. Divide it up like that, 1,400, okay, chariot cities, 300, King Solomon in Yerushalayim. Rashi continuing. While here, this is the explanation, over here in 1 Kings, here's the pshat. He led them, meaning the 1,400, because that's the number you see in Kings, he led them in the chariot cities and with the king, that is, with the king were some of them in Yerushalayim. That is, with the king were some of the 1,700 mentioned here in our verse. Right. Rashi, continuing, this is the rabbi writing, Rabbi Rosenberg. Rashi's wording that those with the king were excluded from the number in Chronicles, and those with the king were included in the number mentioned in Kings, makes it obvious that the version in Chronicles is 1,400, whereas the version in Kings is 1,700. Maybe. Maybe, because it's not at all the case that I should think that Kings has 1,700 when it says to me 1,400.
I think you just got them backwards. Oh, no,
yeah. And then again, because there are so many, I shouldn't say this, but there are occasionally there are editorial mistakes in the book over here. So I just wonder sometimes what is meant and what is not meant. What is a typo and what's not a typo? It's difficult to kind of know sometimes. Maybe he actually means this, and he's just trying to make, oh, it really means 1,400 in Kings. Oh, it actually means 1,700. How would I even know that? So maybe you're right. Maybe this is just simply a typo and something to consider. Opposite meant. Okay. Mrs. Brillo, what do you want to say? Anything? Certainly doesn't make it obvious. I can say it's obvious. Rashi is confronted by 1,700 in Chronicles. And over here, he's confronted by 1,400. So what is it obvious that it's the opposite? That's a strange thing to write. Only can be, like Rabbi Roloff says, a slight typo, okay? At all events, we're doing the best we can over here with the Rashi. This discrepancy is reconciled by Rabbi Yosef Kara in exactly the same manner as it's reconciled by Rashi. The same error is present, Rabbi Rosenberg writes, the same error is present in our version of Rashi are present in his commentary. So, he's got the same girsa as Rashi does, l'chora. As mentioned above, our version of the text is identical with that of Chronicles. This is supported by Targum Yonason. So, the Targum Yonason has a proper text, but somehow, into Rashi's girsa, roughly 1,000 years later, after Targum Yonason, 800 to 1,000 years later, Rashi has a different text.
Rosenberg has something comparable to a senior moment. Because here, too, he's still writing as if the question is what the proper text is in Velachim. And is Velachim the same as Yerim, or is Velachim different than Divrei Yomim? The two sides of it are, about the Divrei Hayomim, if it's 1,700 or 1,400. It sounds like sometimes people can do that. Any of us can do that. Momentarily you have a little bit of a mental lapse, and you confuse A with B. So I think he did that explicitly, and then referring to the same thing. He didn't look for the moment. He didn't think for a moment. He remembered there was a questionable text in one of the two sources, Rashi. Between Rashi and what we have, and he just flipped them in his mind. Right. And this is the kind of thing that you'd have to have some proofreader to catch.
Yes.
And particularly if you proof it yourself, just go through it.
You'll never catch
it. Right.
You'll never catch your own mistakes. You always need fresh eyes. So true. Thank you for that. We continue. Okay, that's what's going on. We tried to deal with that as best we could. He led them. We continue on. That was, we are still on this pasuk, 1 second. Vayanchem barei rechav v'melech Yerushalayim. He led them in the chariot cities and with the king in Yerushalayim. So the footnote says, he led them. Targum Yonason and Mitzuda rendered this as he stationed them. And he gave them noach, he gave them rest, he stationed them there. According to them, it's identical with Chronicles, where the word over there in Chronicles is Vayanichem. Over here, Vayanchem. Vayanchem in Kings, Vayanichem over there in Chronicles. Same idea. What does it mean? Ve'em ha-melech b'Yerushalayim, and with the king in Yerushalayim. He led these horses both in the chariot cities and with the king in Jerusalem. So Targum Yonason renders it, aside from those who were with the king in Yerushalayim. Ve'em ha-melech b'Yerushalayim, meaning he had lots of these horses and stuff in the chariot cities, aside from those who were with the king in Yerushalayim. And the Radak suggests, after they were gathered to the king in Yerushalayim, he led them to the chariot cities. After they were gathered first to the king in Yerushalayim, he then led them, by Yanchein, he then led them, Be'orei HaRechev, to the chariot cities. And there's a further footnote over here. As long as we have a further footnote, a super footnote, let's see if it adds anything. Okay, it's a small, it's good. This verse tells us that Shlomo violated the negative commandment, only he may not acquire many horses. Pasuk in Deuteronomy chapter 17, verse 16. And that's from Yosef Kara. This pasuk is telling us that he violated the negative command. When you learn Koheles, as I'm doing with one of the Chavrei Akola, you've got to be very careful to ascribe sins to King Shlomo, because nobody's hearing that. Nobody wants to hear that Shlomo did any sins. He gathered together lots of horses. He gathered together lots of wives. But since we can never actually say that he did that, at least you and I can't say that, but Rabbi Yosef Kara can say it, and others are going to say it, but we can't. It sounds like the Slifkin affair all over again. So rather we say that Koheles meant that I was trying to lay down Gedarim and Gevulim and all kinds of boundaries, and I was superseding the boundaries, but I was not really actually violating biblical principles. I was just merely going above and beyond boundaries that I laid out for myself, or words to that effect, if I can remember correctly. Because you never want to say that Shlomo sinned. Okay, be like that.
You deal with people who are of that mindset. You have to learn a certain vocabulary, like, and they had a guest rabbi from, I don't know where, Parshas Korach, I think, while he wasn't talking during Jewish Korach, as Zegi Korach, they only heard in recent years, but he said when Korach sinned in terms of his body, something dakas when dakas, in the most minor, tiny little sin, which is not what the Torah seems to say, it's not how Chazal seems to do it either, but it's just something which they picked up as a second nature in terms of what how you're supposed to relate to these figures. So when you're speaking to them, you live with them, so you put the vocabulary in, and then that.
Right, and yet there does seem to be some kind of biblical support in Koheles to try to make sense out of what the author over in Koheles is writing. And you can make the argument that he, you know, he's trying to lay down principles, and I tried to do this, and I did that, and I tried to live a life a certain way. So it's just trying to make some sense out of what Shlomo's writing over there, and it's you're doing the best we can over there. At all events, your point is well taken. Ralbag, this is a continuing in the super footnote, Ralbag notes that it is stated previously in Kings that Shlomo had 40,000 stalls of horses. That's chapter, First Kings chapter 5, verse 6. Shlomo had 40,000 stalls of horses. That's a lot of stalls. However, the thoroughbred choice horses, mostly those that were presented to him as tribute, were placed in the chariot cities where they were especially groomed. So let's face it, he was getting a lot of good gifts, and they began to add up. And we continue. 27, may not finish tonight, but God willing next week, we'll finish it sometime this year. Chav Zayin, Vayitan HaMelech Hazeh Kesef Yerushalayim Ka'abonim. The king made silver like stones in Yerushalayim. He made silver pieces as worthless as a bunch of rocks were. V'sa'arazim Nasan Kashikmim, Asher B'Shefelu Arov, and cedars, Arazim, cedar trees, He made them like shikmim. And that's it. Well, look at that word, shikmim. And look at the word sycamore. Are you kidding me? Is that where that English word comes from? From that Hebrew? That's amazing. Sycamore, coming from shikma or shikmim. Wow. And he made cedars as common as sycamore trees. A sheba shefela, which are found in the lowlands, the rove, for abundance purposes. Here, there were so many. There were so many fabulous cedar trees, which are relatively rare in Israel, because you got to go to the Lebanon to get them. But there were so many flying around Israel. They were just like sycamore trees that you find all over Israel. That's just an amazing thing. Wow. Take a look. He made silver ka'avanim. The pasuk says, ka'avanim like rocks, like stones. And Rabbi Rosen writes, just like above it was written, he made silver like nothing. Take a look at verse 21. Go back a moment to see pasuk chaf aleph, and over there you'll see b'chol ma'aseh. Ein kesef lo nechshav l'me'uma. In his days, silver was basically valueless. It was worthless.
Right.
Like in that famous story about the guy who goes to support his family, and he finds himself on an island, and there's diamonds, and they're everywhere. He doesn't pick up many of them up, because they're just everywhere. They're worth nothing. He finally takes five, and he comes back. Oh, if I only would have known. Our rabbis explain, this is going to be Rashi from Sanhedrin. Our rabbis explain that one refers to the... Okay. So what is it? Is it like, is it totally valueless? Or is it like avanim? Is it the case that silver is going to be lo nechshav kima'uma, like absolutely nothing? Or is it the case that silver is equated to rocks? Now you and I know they're basically the same thing. I mean, rocks are rocks. They only have value in Israel where you can pick them up and throw them at a Jew. But oh, what's a rock worth otherwise? So the rabbis say that one pasuk refers to the time before Shlomo got married to Parah's daughter. And one refers to the time after he got married to Parah's daughter. And you'll see the super footnote over there saying that, okay, one is before and one is after. And, all right, let's just finish this up. And then we'll do the super footnote next week. And cedars, the cedar trees, the arazim were just like sycamore trees. Says the Malbim, Yerushalayim became the trading capital of the world. Imagine this. It's not on the ocean. It's not on the Mediterranean Sea. What is it, 40 miles inland from the Mediterranean? And that became the trading capital of the world. All the inhabitants of Yerushalayim became prosperous, and they built homes of cedar trees. So says the Malbim. That's how things were. Everybody in Yerushalayim was wealthy, and everybody built a home out of a cedar tree. Amazing reality. Really something else. Incredible. Back in those days, Jewish people were, as we said earlier, they were leading the division at the All-Star break, and then they kept on leading the division into the until they got into the World Series, and they won it year in and year out under Shlomo's kingdom and kingship. So thank you so much, everybody, for coming out tonight. So I was a little bit late. God willing, I'm sure that next week we'll really finish up. I'm going to keep on saying this, but really, really marvelous next week. And then, God willing, we're going to go in to chapter 11, and we'll see the beginning, I think kind of the beginning of the end of Shlomo's kingdom, at least his rulership, and what might have brought it about. And we're going to explore that in the opening psukim. We'll try to make a good dent in it. And I want to thank everybody for coming out. Big yeshikach to one and all. Thank you, Barry. Thank you, everybody, Mrs. Brillo. Zayitz gesund. God willing, next week we'll come out and finish the super footnote, and we'll continue on to the last psukim and finish off. Have a great week, everybody. Zayitz gesund. Kol tov.